My name's John Hudson. I'm an alcoholic. What a wonderful group you have. What a neat thing for Kim to have that history and to read it. We do that sometimes up in Ohio in the meetings up there. We have histories. And it's important, I think, for anybody in this room, especially newcomers, if you're just coming around, because these people, if it wasn't for these people, we wouldn't be sitting in this room. You know? And I thought, we wouldn't. Because the meeting shut down, and then this fellow had the spunk to start again. He wanted to make coffee and stay sober. And he was enthusiastic, you know, and I'm enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't get anything else out of this talk tonight, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's just changed my whole life, you know. We talk about in these rooms, we talk about how, well, I changed. Well, I haven't done anything. You know, God and you people have changed me. That's what it is, you know. Left to my own devices, I'd be out there crawling around drunk in a parking lot. Did that many times. When I say I'm an alcoholic, that's just, you know, that's a fact of my life for me today, you know. Like I'm 57 years old. and I'm 6 foot tall and I got gray hair and I'm alcoholic. And those are facts of my life that I can accept for myself today. I was a teenage drunk. There's nothing special about my story, you know. I'm no kind of special drunk. I was a falling down, lamppost hanging, puking drunk. Oh, yeah. I was a teenage drunk. I remember the first time I ever got in trouble with alcohol. I don't know when I had my first drink, because my mother and my father, they drank a bit, you know. And my mother, she used to drink warm beer and kept it in the kitchen closet. And I used to steal it. And I don't know how old I was, but I loved that. I couldn't figure out for a long time why my dad drank beer out of the refrigerator. That warm stuff was good. That was great stuff. So, I don't know when I had my first drink, but I was always preoccupied with it. You know, I can remember when I was 10 years old. I had a guy, 22 years old, look at me. And I told him, I said, you know, I can't wait till I'm old enough to drink. And he looked me dead in the eye and he says, John, nobody's old enough to drink. He must have known something about drinking and not drinking, you know. But I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. And I didn't. I was 14 years old. I was in an alley. And my friend Keith was with me, Keith M. And he ended up being a member of this fellowship. And he died sober, God bless him. But Keith and I were in the alley, and we had a bottle of gin. Some other pals were with us, and Keith got drunk. I didn't get drunk. I went off to a movie, but I got in trouble. Keith ended up in jail that night. He got in trouble. But I got in trouble. If I hadn't been in that alley with that gin, I would have never gotten in any trouble. And it took me from that time to the time I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 37 to understand that. I forgot to tell you my sobriety date is December 10th, 1978, by the grace of God. And my home group is the New Lexington group of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I get that business out of the way. I drank like it says in the big book, of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I drank for the effect. That's what I drank for. I didn't particularly like it or, you know, but it got me drunk. It got me someplace else, you know. I didn't want to be with me. And it took me places that, you know, it was wonderful, you know. So I drank in high school and I drank for the effect. And when I got out of high school, I went to the Navy, you know. And they let me drink whenever I wanted to, how much I wanted to, and I got in a lot of trouble. I was a corpsman in the Navy, and I would put people in danger. You know, that's like a medic person. I would put people in danger because I'd be drinking. I was drunk. And I set up a pattern for myself. I think we all have patterns, all alkies do. I set up a pattern. I was a periodic drunk. And what I would do is I would set up a pattern where I'd set up goals for myself, and I'd attain the goals, and I'd reward myself by getting drunk. Going on drunk. That's the way it was, pretty much, for my whole drinking career. I won't take you through all those war stories, drinking in the Navy, you know. I drink and I get busted and I get in trouble and I, you know, all those kinds of things. When I was in the Navy, it was the first time I was ever confronted about my drinking. You know, somebody said something to me. I used to talk to an old chief, and he had been in these rooms before at Alcoholics Anonymous, and he knew that I needed to be here. But when he talked to me about it, we'd be out in a bar drinking, and so I didn't see any sense, you know. Why bother? Well, just skip the meeting and go to the bar. Hey, heck yeah. And another time I was sitting in a kitchen, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm drinking a beer. Now, for any of you that got doubts, that isn't social drinking. You know? And if you want to, you know, rationalize that one, well, I did, of course. But I was drinking a beer, and this nurse that I worked with was telling me that I had a problem, drinking problem. The night before, I've been in a blackout. I've been in a fight, and I got beat up. You know? Didn't know where I was when I woke up. But there was beer in the refrigerator when I woke up, so I just sat down and started. But she talked to me about just drinking, and I wasn't ready. I wasn't, you know, of course I wasn't. I was just a young fellow. And so I had her drop me off at the bar, take me to the bar. She had to go to work or something. I said, well, let's go to the bar. And that's what I did. And so that's the kind of thing, you know. We always get drunk at the most inopportune times, you know. We always, isn't that? That's the way it was with me. I don't know about you, but well, I would get drunk at the, jeez. So I got out of the Navy and I came back, I came to Columbus, I moved to Columbus. I took a little detour there. I stayed with my sister in the D.C. area. She was a school teacher, and she knew how to live. And my, you know, she got tired of my act coming home, tripping through her door at 2:30 in the morning. She didn't like that business, so I moved to Columbus. I got a job, and I started school, and I got married. Now, I should have gotten a job if I should have started school. That's questionable. but I should have never gotten married, because the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill tells us about how emotionally immature. And I was that. I was emotionally immature. I didn't know how to form a relationship, a partnership with another human being. Had no idea. I'm 12 years old, going on 20, whatever. You know, I don't know. I have no idea. But I did those things. And I don't know how I got through school. I wasn't one of these people that had to get A's. You know, just give me a D, give me a C, give me... I did get some A's, but it didn't, you know, I didn't work, you know. I didn't say, well, I'm going to get an A in this course and go every day or whatever. It just was blind luck. But I got... Because the piece of paper I was going to get is going to be just as good as the fellow that got all A's. I thought, that's a, you know, con of myself, rationalizing. Lazy, I was lazy. And they doubt about that. But I got through school, and then I got a job, and we moved to Connecticut, and... By this time, I got a little girl, Amy, my daughter, and I'm not supposed to be drinking. I'm not supposed to be drinking. Because by this time, my wife knows that I got a problem. You know, she knows that I got a little problem. So I'm not supposed to be drinking. Before she moved up there with her, Amy, I was up there and I was living in a motel. I was living with these iron workers in a motel. And these are tough guys, hard drinkers, iron workers, tough guys. And they took me to a football game one. I don't know what I did. Because I got drunk. I don't know what I did, but they wouldn't speak to me for 2 weeks. I don't know. I embarrassed them. I don't know what I did. Yeah. That's the way I was. That's the way I was when I was drunk. It didn't matter at all. Whatever I wanted, that's what counted. And I was, you know, and I had this selfish, self-seeking business that I've always had. I had that way before I ever picked up a drink. I was a little rat before I ever picked up a drink. I was a rat when I picked up a drink, and I was a rat after I put it down. Yeah. Alcohol is but a symptom. That's what it tells us in the big book. It's just a symptom of, you know, and I was not playing with a full deck when I picked up the first drink when I was 14 years old. And yeah, I didn't know that. I thought I was normal. So anyway, so we go to Hartford, Connecticut, and I got this job, and I'm scared now. I'm afraid. Unfounded fears. I didn't know what I was afraid of. Was I going to tell my wife? No. Because I grew up with John Wayne. You know? I'm not going to tell her. Gail, I'm scared. I'm afraid. You don't do that. You're a man. You just suck it up and go on, you know? And you know, what I did was drink. You know, that's how I took care of my fears, and I don't know what I was afraid of. I didn't have any faith, obviously. You know? I always thought I was a coward. Always. And that's because I didn't have any faith. If I had faith, I'd have a little courage. So I'm scared, and she doesn't like it in Connecticut, so I play the martyr, and I say, well, we'll just move. I'll quit my job, and we'll move back to Columbus, and we did. And I set me up to look like a good guy, and I'm scared. That's what I am. I'm afraid, and I'm scared. We get back to Columbus, and I get a job with an insurance company in Columbus, a good job, by the grace of God, you know. And I did fairly well at that job. The drinking, the periods of drunkenness are getting a little longer now, and the periods of sobriety are getting a little shorter for me. And I'm drinking more, and I'm sober less. Because, you know, we all have to sober up sometime, you know, and we all do. We all do, you know. We may not stay sober. I certainly didn't, but we all have to sober up sometime. You can't drink 365 days a year or be drunk be drunk all that time and not, because you've got to recover, you die. Now, we could do pretty good at it. You know, we do the best we can. Sometimes we just got to have a couple, take the edge off and take the rest of the day off, you know. So I'm working at this insurance company. I'm doing pretty good. I know that I didn't give them 100%, you know. But I'm doing pretty good at it. And I knew this so much about my drinking, you know, my history. I was accumulating this history in front of me. You know, I was out there writing my story. That when I drank, I knew by now that I couldn't predict what was going to happen. You know, I figured that out way back in the Navy, you know, because I would pick up a drink and I wouldn't know where I was going to end up. I picked up a drink one night in New York City, and I ended up in some city in New Jersey in a flop house. Now, some of you people don't know what a flop house is, but that's where I ended up, with a brown bag and wine and that kind of business. And I was young, 20, 22. So I knew that when I picked up a drink, I didn't know what was going to happen. I couldn't predict to you what was going to happen. And so what? When the boys would go out for lunch, I wouldn't drink, because I knew I needed that job. I knew that. And I didn't know what was going to happen if I picked up a drink, so I was big time. Yeah, I didn't have to drink. And I always wondered, why don't you have a beer with your lunch? You know, just saying. Not me, because I knew I might not go back to work. I might end up in L.A. I didn't know. Yeah, who knows? So, by this time we have a little boy, Pete, and a company comes to me and promotes me, and I think I'm a big deal, but the marriage is in shaky shape because of my behavior. And we moved to Akron. Now, isn't that something? And I'm still drinking. Wife didn't really want to go. She told me one time, she wanted to go, and the kids and I will stay here, but it's a basket case. So she finally decided she'd come with us and come with me. So we moved to Akron, and now I get this job where I think I'm a big deal, and I'm out doing seminars and this kind of, so that's when I'm drinking, because I travel on the weekends and I'm a big deal, you know, I think. And I'm trying to lie to her about my drinking, and I was a liar, but I just wasn't good at it. You know? Some people got that talent, you know, but I didn't. I wasn't any good at it, but I would do it. I had an old timer tell me one time, "Hudson, you want to quit all that lying, you might need it in case you pick up a drink. You might need them talents." So, we're up in Akron, and alcohol begins not to work. Many of you in this room know how that is. It doesn't work for us anymore. And so I thought, well, what I'm going to do is, since this alcohol isn't working for me, I'm going to just kill myself. You know? So I attempted suicide. When I first came to these rooms and they let me talk, I used to call it an accident. But it was attempted suicide. And so I'm very fortunate. I've known God's grace all my life. I didn't necessarily recognize it or praise it or want to give it too much juice. But when I was a boy, I had polio. I'm not perfect. So I understood about God's grace. And when I attempted this suicide, I ran a car. Company car, not the family car. The thinking, the alky thinking is, gotta leave something for the wife and the kids to come to the funeral. I don't think so. She'd have probably thrown a party. I don't know. But anyway, what I did was, I broke two cervical vertebrae, and it was nip and tuck, you know, whether I was going to survive. For the grace of God, I did. But now, she knows for sure that she's got somebody who definitely is not playing with full deck. You know, I'm just about a half turn shy of the whole deal. So, she decides to take the children and move back to Columbus. So I'm up there in Akron, and I'm boohooing. And this is the other thing I can tell you, is that I hired a secretary when I left there. And this lady was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know it. So she knows what secretary knows she's got a drunk on hand. The wife knows she's got it. I'm the only one that didn't know, you know, or didn't want to face it. So anyway, I'm up there trying to sell this house, and I'm boo-hooing around, and I lost a job. I lost my job. I lost the home. I was losing the home. I lost the family. I didn't lose the car. Right? Sharp guy. So I called my friend Keith. You remember him in the alley in the jail? He's in California, and he was a lifer in the Navy. And I called him up, boo-hoo. We do? We do that. I can see it. You guys know what I'm talking about. I'd be crying, you know, boo-hoo. Lost my job, lost the family, lost the music. Got to sell a house. Boo-hoo. Don't want to lose it. He says, well, I quit drinking. I said, well, good, you should. He should have, too. He was drunk. Oh, my goodness. We used to get in so much trouble. Oh, my, drinking. And so I knew that he shouldn't. But what he did was he got sober on a ship. There ain't a whole lot of big rooms on a ship, you know. So little storage rooms and stuff, and that's where they had their AA meetings, you know, beach full of smoke. You had to want to stay sober. You had to want to be sober to do that. And he got sober, and so he pitched AA to me. But I'm still a big deal. And I'm only 30-some years old, 35, whatever, and I'm still too young. Still, you know, still holding on. Still holding on. But he pitched AA to me and planted the seed. And I knew if he could get sober, there was a shot. If I ever decided that that's what I wanted to do. And we don't do that. So we don't wake up one morning and say, gee, nice Saturday morning, I think I'll go to AA meeting today. We get prayed into these things. Oh, we do. Oh, I believe that. We get prayed in here. Somebody might have been a monk in Arizona praying. I don't know. I don't know who it was. Work. Thank you. Yeah. So Keith, he pitches AA to me, and my secretary came to get me the day they fired me and took me up to her parents' house because they were going to a racetrack. And she pitched AA to me. And this is after I talked to Keith. I thought, what is going on? But I didn't know anything about it. You know, I said, what is this AA? And I think she was a newcomer. I think she was fairly new. Her name was Mary Ellen. I'll never forget her. Because she tried to carry the message. And I said, what is this AA? She said, well, what you do is you quit drinking and you go to meetings and you get a sponsor. And when I heard the word sponsor, I thought somebody was going to pay my way in here, and I was still a big deal. And I didn't have a house. I didn't have a job. You know, but I was still a big deal. Nobody's paying my way, thank you. So I just cut her off and went up to her parents' house, went up the track, and I got drunk. There you go. That's my history. So I moved back to Columbus. And I get a job by the grace of God. Now, I don't have this wife and this family, I think. Of course I've done. They're on the other side of town, or wherever they are. And I got those responsibilities, but I don't think I do. I don't think I do. Now I think I can drink how I want to, when I want to, whenever I want to, like I was 18 years old when I was in the Navy. And so that's what I do. And so now the periods of drunkenness are getting much longer. I'm a daily drinker by now. Daily drinker. Drinking almost daily now. And I'm getting in trouble at work, not where they were calling me on the carpet, but I had a bunch of women working for me at work. And they were good people, and they knew what I was. And I come in the morning, and one morning I came in, and they had all these candy and gum, and you know, they were trying to tell me I reeked. They were tell a drinking alky that, you know. I come in, I start throwing all this stuff off, you know? Resentful, you know. Talk about resentment. Ooh. Slam out, boy. I bet you I went and got drunk that night. So anyway, but people tried to love me. You know, people were trying to tell me, you need to help me. I'm getting down to my last drunk, you know, and it isn't any different than any other of my drunks. Oh my goodness, no difference, you know. I was a blackout drinker. First of all, I was a blackout drinker from early on. It was during this period of time that I would lose large periods of time in terms of memory. I woke up one night. I'm driving between the entrance ramp and an exit ramp to a freeway in a grassy area. And I didn't know how I got down there. And I didn't know how I was going to get out. And I knew if the Columbus Police Department caught me down there, I was in deep trouble. But they didn't. And I got out. And the next day I see green paint on the car. I had a yellow car. And I'm thinking, I'm looking in the paper. Did I kill somebody? Did I hit somebody and kill somebody? Did that stop me from drinking? Kept right on drinking. Didn't stop. And you folks know what I'm talking about. So anyway, my last drunk wasn't any different than any other ones. I got drunk and I blacked out. I got beat up again one more time. And my sponsor, the sponsor I have today, he tells me, don't tell his partner. Because Kim knows my sponsor, and he's a hard guy. He's a wrestling coach and top triathlon kind of guy. When I start talking about getting beat up, he doesn't like that. But he especially doesn't like it when I tell him that a woman beat me up. He says, Hudson, why don't you just stand up and lie and tell him you just beat on women? I didn't do that. A woman beat me up. So we never get in trouble at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, do we? 3 o'clock in the morning, 2:30, that's when we get in trouble. And so I'm shoeless by now. I got no shoes. I'm beat up, drunk, bleeding, no shoes. Got a car, don't know where it is. Because I drove it home and I parked it somewhere. I hit another car. I was good at hitting cars when I was drinking. If you were moving, you were safe. If you park that car, you're in deep trouble. Well, I hit another parked car, my last drunk. Didn't know it for a month. Oh, yeah. So I'm shoeless. It's winter time. December 10th, though, winter time. Snow on the ground. I'm shoeless. Trying to get in my apartment. Now, I live alone. I don't have the key. I don't know. It's probably in the car keys. I don't know. All I would have had to do is move this screen and crawl in the window. That's all I would have had to do. Right? I'm pounding on the door. I live alone. I don't know who I thought was going to answer the door. I don't know. Hope is found here. Maybe I had some hope. I have a little hope. Maybe somebody's in there. Maybe there's a thief in there going to open the door. I don't know. But the neighbors heard me. You know, they don't like this because we don't get trouble two in the afternoon when everybody else is working. So they called the Whitehall Police, which is a suburb of Columbus, and they come to get me. And because I'm cut, I'm bad. My face is bad because I got beat up good. So they take me to the hospital, right? And so I'm laying on the ground, and they had to call somebody. Yeah, some kind of plastic surgeon or something. 2:30 in the morning, he was not happy. Because he had to sew me up. I mean, you know, the guy wanted to sleep. If I hadn't got drunk and got beat up, he would have still been sleeping all night, probably. But I'm laying on the gurney, and he comes in, and he's hot. And he's telling me what a bum I am, you know. And I'm thinking, well, let me see. I got this apartment. I got a job. I got a car. I don't know about this bum business, you know. But he said something. I don't know what it was. And I was a bum inside, too. I was a bum. And I felt that. I didn't know that was going to be my last drunk. He sewed me up and said, get him out of here. Shoeless, in the hospital, got $3. So they got a cab. So I tried to bribe the cab driver and stop him somewhere, wherever, get me another drink with his $3. He said, oh no, you're going home and I'm taking your $3. I said, okay, that was my last drink. You know, nothing exciting about that deal. I didn't know that. I woke up the next morning, sick, sorry, and sober, like we all, many times. You know, had a big head, got bandages, you know. And then the first time I've gotten awake with bandages, and did, you know. If I'm sick, sorry, and sober, I am, you know, soul sick. And I know, soul sick. It talks about the soul sickness. I'm soul sick. So I called this woman I knew, and she's a nurse. And I think she knew I was an alcoholic for sure. And she used to work at this other hospital. She says, well, you know, they got a place down there for alkies. Why don't you go find out if you're an alcoholic? She knew. I couldn't think any more lies to tell her, you know, about how my face got in the condition it was. If I could have thought of one more lie, I was going to work the next day. No doubt in my mind. I couldn't think. God took that away. I sat on my couch. I probably said the first honest prayer I'd ever said that, you know, may have been, I don't know. I said, God help. God help. And I surrendered. I surrendered. I didn't know that's what I did then. I didn't know that. But when I said, God help me, I surrendered. So I couldn't do it. And I knew I couldn't do it. So I go down this jitter joint. It's called Talon Hall. I go down this jitter joint. And so the best thing they did for me in the jitter joint is they kept me away from alcohol. I'm going to tell a story about this jitter joint. I'm going to cut it off here pretty soon. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go to a meeting in Columbus. It's the Somerset meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called an open-end lead meeting. We call them leads out here in Scotts. You know what that is? Open-end. I didn't know. I'm going to it for 2 months. And I said, what is that? You can talk as long as you want. I'm not going to do that. So I'm in the jitter joint, and there's this old guy in there. And he's been in and out of these rooms, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's in there as a patient, just like me. And he's an older guy. But he spoke fell no, and I did too. So I hung out with him because he had, and I didn't. Nothing changed. I still can't, you know. So his name was Irwin. I'll never forget it. So I'd sit next to him. They'd take us to these meetings and the jitter joint and stuff, and I'd sit next to him. He hit me one time, and he'd been around these rooms, so I was listening to him. I didn't think about, well, he was back in for drinking. I didn't think of that. He hits me one time, and he says, so what, Irwin? He says, you know, I'll buy some of this AA business, but I won't buy it all. I filed that away. I did what I know. I didn't know. I thought, well, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know. But I filed it away. I never forgot it. I get out of jitter joint. I'm going to tell this story here about Irwin, but I'm going to talk about it when I get out of jitter joint. I'm out of jitter joint for a year, maybe. I'm walking down the street, 6:30 in the morning, Columbus, here comes over toward me. He's drunk. I eyeball him. He needs a drink, and he asks me for money. I'll give him money, because I know what it's like to have you need a drink. So I give him money. He goes on his way. About 6 months later, I see him, same place. I don't know if he's waiting. What? He's walking down the street. I'm walking down the street. He sees me. I eyeball him. He won't look at me, because he recognizes me. He won't look at me. He's drunk. Goes on down the street. Maybe 6 months later, I pick up the paper, and Irwin died in the gutter. He wouldn't buy all this. He never forgot. Now, sometimes we can learn so much more, at least I can, from wet drunks than we ever learn from soberness. Swear to God. Swear to God. So that was my lesson, one of my lessons. So I get out of jitter joint, and God graced me. God touched me, you know. Because I believe I'm here by the grace of God and nothing else. I was standing in an apartment building, and I had a choice to make, you know. I didn't make this choice, but I had a choice of whether to drink this beer that was sitting on the table, it wasn't open, or go to the friendship group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was next door. God touched me, said, go to me, I went to me. These old timers were there. I mean, these guys were sober all the time, you know, these guys. But they were friendly, and they shook my hand, and they welcomed me. And you know what they did? They asked me to coffee afterward. Nobody had asked me any place for a long time. I mean, my last drunk, the reason the woman beat me up is that she was having a party, and I threw everybody out. Right? You know? Nobody was inviting me any place. And they took me to coffee. And they were laughing, and they were smiling, and they were telling jokes, and Jack, this guy named Jack, I'm going to use these names, and they don't mean anything to anybody here, but those names mean something to me, because I heard them, and Jack did it, was a wonderful man, old timer, you know, he was there. Tom Downey was there. Jack told the dumbest jokes, you know, he would tell dumb jokes. Well, everybody laughed. Cecil Anderholm was there, and he was an old retired military guy. I'm telling you, Cecil was like a colonel in the army. You know what he was doing? He was working in the sewer plant. Yeah, yeah. He got sober, and that's what he had to do, go in and work in the sewer. Wonderful man. Wonderful sobriety. My goodness, loved AA. And he told good jokes. So I went to coffee for my first time with AA's, you know, I loved them, and they asked me back. And I didn't have any place to go. If I didn't come here, where was I going to go? And I thought, well, I'm going to give this a shot, you know. So they told me to go, where to go the next night, and where to go the next night. And I started kind of hanging out. And then he come, you know, Danny come and get me. I'll never forget the first time Tom Danny came to get me. for a meeting. And he says, I'll be there at 7. So I'm waiting at 7. I'm sitting there watching the TV or whatever. And I hear this rap on the door, and it's a little after 7. And he said, where are you? I said, well, I'm in here. I opened the door. He said, you're supposed to be out here. You're supposed to be out the curb. Wait. That's discipline. It's about discipline. You know, I ain't waiting on you, pal. You know, it's your job to be out here and ready if you want to stay sober and go to meetings. But they would come, he would come and get me and take me to meetings and take me long distances. And I thought that this Alcoholics Anonymous business would rub off. I thought I could sit next to old timers and sit next to these guys and it would rub off. You know, I wouldn't have to do anything. I did that for years. Oh, no problem. You know, it's by the grace of God that I didn't drink. It's only by the grace of God. Now, I had more desire to stay sober than I did drink. You know, all this. And they got me active, and they gave me jobs, and they let me chair, and they let me do stuff. And they did it early on back then. I mean, I can remember taking me to teaching me how to make coffee, and then handing me the keys to church and say, "Your turn next week. The whole month, you make the coffee and you chair the meeting." That kind of thing. So, and they were very, very loving guys. You know, they were tough. They were tough, but. They knew they'd worked with enough alkies that they knew how to do it. They knew they had a live one, and I was bouncing off the walls. So they didn't push me into too much, you know. I'm sure they were taking on bets on how long I'd last. And I didn't think they talked to each other, so I'd lie to one of them. Yeah, I'd lie to the other. I didn't realize they had telephones to talk to. I'd lie to one, and I'd lie to the other, and then they'd catch me, and I thought, well, I better give that up. You know, that's no fun anymore. I remember Downey, he knew I didn't have much. He asked me if I played golf, and I lied and said, yes, I hadn't played for 2 years. But he'd always ask me, you want to play golf after work or whatever? And this is in spring and summer coming up here. And I'd say yes, and then I'd make up some excuse, and he'd say, well, why don't we go to a meeting instead? And so he would come and get me. And then I got a sponsor, and his name was Joe Rapp. And he was a wonderful man. He was so kind. He had this peace in his eyes, you know, and he wasn't sober all that long, but he'd had enough. He'd almost died. He'd almost died from this disease, dead in a hospital, you know. So he had this business with he hadn't and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said yes. And Joe didn't like to talk on the phone, so I would either have to go to his house, I would have to go meet him at a meeting, I would have to go meet him at the coffee shop. He did not like to talk on the phone. Downey talked to him on the phone, as long as it wasn't frivolous, you know. I got Joe, and Joe hadn't... When I got Joe, he was just starting to read the Big Book. And he was sober 5 years at the time. And he was just starting to read the Big Book. These guys, you know what these guys did for him? I'll tell you, this was powers of example. Powers of example are what teach us. Okay? When he got sober, he couldn't walk because he was that sick. So, there was a guy who just got off the Supreme Court in Ohio, and he was out there, and he would go get Joe, and he would carry him to the car and take him to a meeting. Those are powers of, that's what I saw. Yeah. They didn't care if he was reading, but he couldn't hold the Big Book. He was too weak. Yeah. But he finally was sober 5 years, and he decided he wanted to know what was in the Big Book, and so he started the Big Book movement. And by the grace of God, I came along at the same time. It was a country club group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we studied the Big Book in 12 and 12. And so I started hanging around with those guys, and I started, you know, listening a little bit, and I loved them. I loved AA. I love alcoholics. If I wasn't standing in here with you people tonight at the AA meeting, I'd be out in the bar talking about it. You know, that's the way. I just love alcoholics. Love the stories. You know, I love talking about these. So, but I want to stay here with you. So it took me a while. You know, it took me a while to kind of decide. Or I don't even think I decided. I think I got myself in there. You know, we make decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt. And I would do that, stone cold, sober, you know. And I get hurt, and I didn't like it. And I started not to like it because I don't have anything to take the edge off. You know? You used to be able to take a little shot, take the edge off. You know? I have caused myself a little pain. Now I didn't have that. So now I had to face life. I was watching these guys, and these guys were all Catholic. I'm not a Catholic. They were going to church every day. So I saw these powers of example. I saw how they lived. And so they were teaching me through their actions, you know. And then Joe got me going to the Big Book meeting, so I started to, you know, I started to read the Big Book and study it with them, and I liked it. I liked learning this business, you know. And I learned most of my AA I learned in coffee shops, because they take you to a coffee shop. You made a mistake, some kind of mistake or something, they would get you in a coffee shop, and they would sit you down, and they would not let go. I asked a young lady one time to lead a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she never had a drink in her life. Do you think that, oh my goodness, I didn't know that. She was coming to these meetings, she was saying she's an alcoholic. I asked her to lead the meeting, and she'd never had a drink. Man, them guys got me in a coffee shop in New York. They didn't say nothing in the meeting to me. You know? They waited until I got in the coffee shop, and I was, oh. But that's the way I learned. That never happened again. So it got to a point where I had to start doing this and start looking at the steps, and Joe was more than willing to help me with them. If I had questions of Tom, more than willing to help me, you know, about how this works and how to do the step and how to take it. And I remember I was telling him at the meeting last night, I want to tell you that I've been to that Duluth meeting twice now that you have here. It's a wonderful group, a very warm group, and I just want to say that, you know, I've had a warm welcome here from you alcoholics here in Atlanta. I want to thank you if I am remiss and don't do that. But so I started to do that stuff, and I took, when I was telling out there, I took this fourth step in a library, and I called a priest, and I'm not Catholic, but I called this priest, and I went to him, and I gave it to him, and I felt a little better. And I started to got to where I go to make the amends, you know, where I started making amends. Because I've done everything wrong there is to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, besides take a drink. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, I wanted to make amends to my first ex-wife. I'm not going to talk about marriage too much. I told Kimmer I was going to talk for about an hour on marriage, and she said, no, don't do that. You haven't been successful at it. Three times. So I wanted to make amends to her right away, you know, when I just got sober. And she had the good sense to know better. And she said, I don't think you better be doing that right now. So they taught me when to start to do this business. I'm not going to go into all the... I've had a wonderful, wonderful life in AA. Yeah, it's changed me. You people changed me in God. That's what it is. There's certain things that I do to stay sober today. I try to go to meetings. I try to work with newcomers. I've always been one of those people that's been very good with wet drunks, newcomers, you know. And then I work with them because I just love doing it. And new people. And then I kind of let them go. You know, let them go and give them their wings and let them go. I've had many, many kinds of activities in AA. I love it. I have friends all over the country in AA. You know, Kimmer. My goodness, Kimmer here. I knew her when she came in. She's got you guys fooled. She is a miracle. She is a miracle, this kid. I met her. I'm going to tell a story. That's all right. She would look down like this. She wouldn't look at you. And she wouldn't talk. I drove her miles, hundreds of miles. And I would do all the talking. She would never talk. And I look at her now. Wonderful. Miracle. A miracle. You know, it's wonderful. So if there's anybody new in here just coming in, don't leave 10 minutes before the miracle happens. Stay. Please stay. This is wonderful. I get excited about this. This is exciting. Don't you think so? There's old timers in here that have a name in this thing. My goodness, what a wonderful thing. Oh, it's wonderful. It's my life. AA is my life, you know. I think I've rambled on. She told me not to talk too long. But I probably did. But we did a lot of stuff beforehand. Without you people in rooms like this, you know, without good sponsorship in a home group, and having AA jobs that kept me responsible, you know, I wouldn't be here. And I love every minute of it. I can't imagine being anyplace else, because those old guys, I knew they were talking about the rest of their life. They did it one day at a time. That's what they were talking about. I want to thank him so much for the honor and the privilege of being able to talk and name him. It is an honor and a privilege. Bill W. says in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that the doctor does, in the doctor's opinion, that Bill asked for the privilege of going to the hospital and tell his story to him. Mm-hmm. And so this is a privilege, you know, and honor. Well, what? 20 years ago, nobody was asking me any place, and Kim asked me to come to Georgia to talk at a meeting. Isn't that wonderful? I think I'm a bit of a miracle moment, stuff, you know. But it was only due to God, the grace of God, and you people. Congratulations on the 30th anniversary of the group again, you know. I hope Kim tells me you have a little small group, but I hope it grows. I hope those of you that are here tonight don't usually come back, you know. It looks like it's just a wonderful, wonderful group, and you have solid AA here. And thank you again for being so hospitable to me while I was here. I enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much.